Hello again, Paul. Come in, come in. Have a seat. How are you doing? What's going on this week?
I'm good, Dr. Hermit Crab. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been lying awake at night. I'm worried about, you know, money, having enough time, you know, the hours of my life ticking away. Yeah, you know, these things keep me awake at night. But, you know, the one thing that keeps me up every night?
Well, what's that, Paul? Tell me.
I'm really worried about the planet Zanshi. I just feel like something terrible is going to happen to me.
Oh, dear.
And welcome to DC OCD, the DC Events podcast, where we're going to go through every single DC event that we deem is worthy and rate it and put them in order and have a great big what are the best events. And today we are looking at a controversial event, a Cosmic Odyssey. And and I'm joined by my friend Mike.
Hello, Paul. Hello, listeners. Welcome to DC OCD.
You didn't think I was going to intro you. Then,
I didn't.
Like to keep you guessing.
Yep.
So Cosmic Odyssey, it came out in the latter half of 1988. It was written by Jim Starlin. So not a particularly DC name, but Jim Starlin, there he is. And they had art by, good golly, Mike Mignola and Carlos Garzon. And it was all coloured by the great Steve Olive. Steve, I take colouring to a company and make lots of money. Olive. And it's lettered by a familiar name to those on Waiting for Doom, John E. Workman Jr.
Johnny,
the workman.
Yeah.
Who is still working in comics today, lettering Batman for Tom King, I believe.
Nice.
And it was expertly edited by Mike Carlin. Mike, the Superman books Carlin, as he was called by me just then.
So, oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So, Mike, the synopsizer, Garvey, what's this one about?
Well, Cosmic Odyssey tells the tale of Metron of the New Gods discovering that the anti-life equation is actually an other-dimensional sentient being, which manages to send four aspects of itself back into our reality, chasing after Metron as he escapes the encounter. And so, of course, heroes from Earth are called upon to join an alliance between New Genesis and Darkseid.
What?
So that they can stop these four anti-life aspects from causing the galaxy to collapse in on itself, Paul.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's some big stake stuff right there.
That sounds epic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is a big one. So, basically a whole universe is at stake. But, you know, Darkseid assembles groups of heroes and he gets Light Ray from the New Gods. So that's the thing. We get the New Gods all over the DC universe suddenly, after Legends. Darkseid's back. He needs DC heroes to save the day. Well, save everyone's day in this case. So, it's an eclectic bunch of heroes they recruit. So they get Greenland John Stewart, and they get Starfire from the Teen Titans, who gets some interesting characterization, which doesn't really seem like Starfire. Far from the Teen Titans, but I like it.
Mm.
I think, she doesn't seem naive and...
No.
She doesn't kiss anyone in this comics. That's not very Starfire.
No.
and he assembles the demon. And, we have Orion of the New Gods, the son of Darkseid, who is raised by High Father of New Genesis. So a bit of nature versus nurture conflict going there. We get John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, or John Jones, depending on how you like to say it. I like to say John Jones. Batman, the lesser-known hero of the DC Universe, Batman. And another one, Superman. And there's one other character, and that is Forager, who is a sort of minor New Gods character who I think he's a human raised by the insect people. Insect Legion, and he gets called disparagingly a bug by Orion, who's a bit of a prejudiced bastard in this comic.
A little bit.
Yeah, this is a great one, don't you think?
This is a fantastic read. It's universal terror, you know, the whole galaxy is at stake here. And yeah, as you said, it's got these really cool team ups sort of traveling across the galaxy to save the day. As you said, save everyone's day. You know, Superman and Ryan head to Thanagar, Light Ray and Starfire, they head to Ran and team up with Adam Strange. Batman and Forager investigate on Earth, and the Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter head off to Zanshi.
That sounds interesting because there's, you know, some well-known DC locales in there, but I've never really heard of Zanshi before this. So,
I think it had been introduced many years earlier in the Green Lantern books after John Stewart had been introduced as Hal Jordan's replacement. So it had kind of been in the background there, but I think it was first introduced in about the 70s. So they kind of said, yeah, here's this planet. We won't touch that again until much later.
Mm. And interesting, this story came out after Action Comics Weekly started, which is where John Stewart was married to Kat Matui of the Green Lantern Corps, an alien, and she gets murdered in, that's so unlike a woman getting murdered in the DC Universe, but there you go. In Action Comics Weekly. But, I mean, technically this came out after that, but I suspect it was written well before that happened, you know, because John doesn't seem to be mourning in this, you know, as he would be.
Well, not at the start of it, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the elephant in the crossover of this one. I mean, firstly, let me say a few things about it. If this came out today, this would be 50 issues. Yes. Everyone would have tied in something to it. It would be huge, you know, they would have dragged it out and spun it out and made these missions more elaborate and, you know, had them in mini-series and that sort of stuff. But it was just a 4-issue prestige series. So, you know, a little hardbound one. I bought it at the time it came out. It's got spines that you can put on the shelf, so there's 4 issues. It stays in print. Like, people like this one. I mean, Mike Mignola went on to create Hellboy. You may have heard of Hellboy. So quite a big deal. And, you know, his art really is a prestige thing now that, you know, gets remembered. And, you can make a buck off Mike Mignola, which is why this one keeps coming back into print. And they've just released a nice big hardcover of it now. So, But, yeah, John Stewart, halfway through issue 2, he just gets overtaken by Jim Starlin, becomes this crazy, arrogant person, doesn't he?
Yes. He, his ego and his hubris kind of work against him in the end.
Yeah, it's sort of uncharacteristic too, because he hasn't really been seen as a massive hothead.
No.
So, in this, he's suddenly, I don't need your help. I'm going to imprison John Johns rather than, you know, let him come along with me on this mission, which he does. And, you know, it's all going swimmingly till he finds that someone who I think it looks like Kevin Dooley, the DC editor, has painted the bomb yellow.
Correct. Yeah.
it's too late for Zanshi. Zanshi goes boom, and the whole planet explodes. And it goes flying off into the sun with antimatter in its core and detonates the sun and wipes out the entire star system.
Mm.
So, an unfortunate day at the office for John Stewart.
Yes, a very bad day at the office.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, what do you think of the big deals in this one, apart from the destruction of the universe being averted?
I think for me, the destruction of Zanshi is the big one. I mean, Cosmic Odyssey, it's a great big galactic romp. It's cool team-ups, it's cool action. Zanshi has lasting ramifications because it changes Jon Stewart's character. He is changed by his failure there after this. It also introduced the character Fatality a few years later.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Who would go, she was the last survivor of Zanshi. She was actually off-world, I believe, at a school on another planet or something on another planet. She learnt that the Green Lantern was responsible for the death of her world, so she just went out and started hunting every Green Lantern she could. Became a massive thorn on their side for a few years. And Zanshi does return in another event years later. Oh. Zanshi plays a part in the Blackest Night event. Because for whatever reason, Jon Stewart heads back there. I think he's in one of his downhearted, mopey moods. And sure enough, a Black Lantern ring ends up on the ruins of Zanshi, starts reforming the planet, and everyone starts to rise up.
Ooh.
Whoops.
Oops.
So, yeah, I think the destruction of Zanshi is like the biggest lasting thing out of Cosmic Odyssey for me. There's also, I think, the fact that the anti-life equation was being shown as a being was an interesting twist. We've only ever heard of it as this, you know, mathematical formula that can wipe out life or whatever. So it was cool to see that interesting twist. And that at the very end, spoiler alert, Darkseid ends up with a chunk of it in his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, neither of those things really stuck particularly around after this.
Yeah.
So that sort of... Next time you really see a big outing for anti-life is probably in Final Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And in that it's just sort of mind control and will submission, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interesting. I really like the fact that the aspects of anti-life take on different forms. So, you know, bloody parademon zombie. How awesome is that?
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, at the start of the story, there's a bunch of apocalyptic warriors land on Earth and they all get repelled by Superman. But one goes astray and he ends up living under the sewers of Gotham and snacking on the odd vagrant and policeman. But Batman ends up shooting him with a great big gun. He ends up with a great big hole in his body, but then the body disappears because it coincides with the arrival of the aspect, the anti-life aspect on Earth, and that possessed that one. And, you know, the anti-life takes on different forms. So in Thanagar, it sort of possesses all the wingmen of Thanagar, and they have to fight Superman and Orion have to fight them. And it also possesses this giant robot, which is cool. It's very Fleischer cartoon-esque.
Yes.
Yeah, rad. And Ran, it creates a disease that starts to kill people, and it becomes a blob. Pretty funky blob. I mean, I love the art of the blob, the way Mignola draws it, and the way Steve Olive colors it. It's such a cool looking blob. It's sort of luminescent bluey green, and yeah, it's very cool.
And the way Starfire deals with that in the end—that's a very cool scene. The way that plays out.
Yeah, yeah. And Adam Strange basically works out where the anti-life is, and then gets knocked out straight away. Not the best outing for Adam Strange.
Nah, he was doing so well up till that part.
Yeah, but Batman and Forager are a great team up in this, aren't they? They have fun on Earth, and Forager gives his life to stop the bomb on Earth, which saves the end of the universe. So, well done, Forager. Yeah, so it's quite a cool story. I mean, one of the things that always amazes me about this, every time I read it, you could just fly through it because it's such a delight to read.
Yes.
You know, I think compared to Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is an enjoyable read, but it isn't quick and it isn't easy. One just, you know, it's a page turner. You want to get to the end of it, and every issue is great, and there's really lovely bits of description and diagram, and you know, dialogue, I mean. Mm. And they, I mean, these were highlighted on the back of the book. Like it's on the back of volume three, it says, you're nothing but a cold-blooded murderer, Orion, as Superman's talking to Orion. And Orion says, that may be true, but you are a fool. I can't understand how you've lasted as long as you have. You know, it's just really good punchy dialogue throughout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My only, I hate saying this, but my only issue with this story is the scene where Batman has to use a payphone to contact someone. And I know that, should I say who he contacts or leave it a surprise?
I think you can say it.
Okay, Batman, you learn by the end of the story that Batman has contacted Dr. Fate. And I know that it's really hard to get in touch with Dr. Fate because he's locked away in his mystical tower and, you know, whatever. But Batman having to use a payphone just drives me nuts. So I know somehow, you know, the gods of fate have gone, oh, we know Batman wants to get in touch with our agent, so let's dial him straight up to the fate phone. But it's like, come on. Batman has no other way of contacting Dr. Fate. A character with the brains and resources of Batman's has no other way. And I, yeah, look, I don't know. It just burns me up inside. Which sounds ridiculous. I know. I don't care. It's my podcast. I'll vent about what I want.
I must say, Mike, that's one of the things that delights me about this series every time I read it. That I remember when it came out, because I was buying these as they came out, I was like, who's he calling? Wow, that's amazing. And yeah. I love the way he says, you know, there's a man on a planet called Apocalypse, called Darkseid. I don't trust him. It's like just calling this god a man and telling someone to go and, you know, keep an eye on him. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. I love it. It's,
yeah.
I mean, it's a good little mystery. It's really cool.
Yes. And it does make sense once Dr. Fate is revealed and, you know, he comes and helps save the day. But the getting to that point, it just just drives me nuts.
Interestingly enough, Dr. Fate in this, at the time in the DC Universe, he isn't the Dr. Fate that appears in this miniseries.
Oh.
This is when Eric and Linda Strauss had become Dr. Fate, so there's the guy and the girl sort of sharing the body, and Kent Nelson had basically died. So, but clearly this is Kent Nelson because it's a very experienced magic user in this. So, you know, if you take the DC Universe continuity as lore, which you know, nerds can do that, this probably happens a lot closer to Legends than we think.
Okay.
And, you know, technically it probably comes before Millennium, and if you wanted to do an accurate timeline.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, you've got the two things. Dr. Fate isn't the new Dr. Fate, and John Stewart still has a living wife in this one. Though, I mean, if his wife was dead, it would explain a lot more of his, you know, irrational behavior, you know, because that could explain some sort of breakdown he's having. But, I mean, really, I mean, people are really upset that this is John Stewart and he's, you know, he's a hero of color stuffing up. And I could see that criticism. I honestly think this could have been Kilowog and it would have worked just as well.
Mm, yeah.
Or even a lesser Green Lantern, like what's the one with the beak?
His name escapes me.
Yeah.
Let's call him Chicken Man.
Chicken Man. Yeah, if it had been Chicken Man, it could have been a good way to introduce a lot more personality for Chicken Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one would go, hang on, this isn't consistent with Chicken Man's past behavior. Mm.
Hello to all the angry Green Lantern fans that are right now writing into us. And apologies for getting Chicken Man's name wrong.
Yes, I am particularly an old person, so my mind does not retain things the way it used to.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, I barely remember your name, Mike. It's just written down in front of me, which is the thing that gets me through these.
Don't worry about it, Daniel. Oh, wait, I mean... Okay, let's move on to scoring.
Oh, okay. Now, Mike, we'll do this. We'll both do eventiness, and then we'll both do writing, okay?
Okay. Eventiness, I'm going to give it 8. Because I think Zanshi is only the really lasting thing that comes out of it, but it does play an important part in introducing us to Fatality and returning in Blackest Night. And I think it's also a huge, romping, great adventure across the galaxy. It's a really great read. There are high stakes, so I think 8 is good.
Okay. For eventiness, I mean, it could be more eventy. I think the story itself is epic, and I love it. Another thing that happens that's significant is in the Matt Wagner Demons miniseries, the Demon and Jason Blood were finally separated so they can sort of live separate existences, which was a victory for Jason Blood. And that was the year before, so it didn't last very long. And Jason Blood and the Demon got reunited. So sad for Jason. And there was also a New Gods series that spun out of this, and I was super excited to read that after reading Cosmic Odyssey, and it did not live up to my excitement at all. So,
oh dear.
Fairly disappointed by that one, and yeah, I got rid of it in one of my comic purges, and I haven't missed it one bit. So, okay. Yeah. So for eventiness, I'll give it a 7 because I think it transcends its mini seriousness, and it has some really, really cool stuff. And the story itself, I mean, if this wasn't a good story, it wouldn't still be in print today, would it?
True. Yeah. True.
So 7 for that.
Okay.
Anyway, for writing, on the other hand, I think this is super strong. I mean, this is my favourite Jim Starlin thing and definitely the best thing he ever did for DC. So, okay. You know, you've got things like The Cult, and you've got his work with the, you know, Death in the Family, The Death of Robin, et cetera, and he did some Batman work in there. And, yeah, this is great. Love it. Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 9.
I'm giving it the exact same score, 9. Because, yeah, it's a great read. And as you said, it's a page-turner. I think the dialogue's really good and really strong. I think the team-ups are really interesting in this as well. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm giving it 9 as well.
Ooh.
Okay, for art and covers, I'm going to give it a 9. I think overall the art is great. The covers are interesting. You know, there's a lot of great stuff in there. Although I noticed in book 4, the final book of this series, some of the art wasn't quite as good. I can't quite explain it, whether the inking isn't as strong or whether there's something off with the colors. Some of the facial expressions of John Johns and John Stewart, they don't quite sit right with me, which I know... Yeah, so the final issue seemed to a bit lacking for me, so I'm going to take a point off for it. Otherwise, it would be a 10, but I think 9, because other than that, it's consistently strong.
Yeah. Whew, that's harsh scoring, Mike, because I give it a 10. I can't fault it. I think it's perfect. I mean, this is, you know, it's all these Kirby concepts, and there's all this Kirby style art. You know, there's Kirby tech, there's Kirby crackle, and it's fantastic. I mean, I may be sacrilegious saying this, but I think Mike Mignola does my favourite version of Darkseid.
That's a good call. Yeah.
Powerful, expressive. You know, he can smile and laugh and look angry and, you know, fume and, you know, it's fantastic. Throughout this series, I was always just delighted by the art. It's fantastic, and the colouring is exceptional on this one.
Yes,
yeah, it works so well. So yeah, I'm giving it 10.
Okay.
And on to impact and legacy. Well, I think this is the weakest part of this. It, you know, John Stewart's changes sort of lasted for a while. I mean, he went off to the Mosaic world and sort of ran things there for a while and had a bit of trauma and became sort of a deeper person for a while. But pretty soon, I think you could say John Stewart's background was sort of, there's a lot more focus on him being an architect, so I don't think that stuck. I mean, the Zanchi thing seems to have resonated a little bit around the place.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, I mean, the only series to launch out of this sort of didn't stick around, so that's the New God one. And the Demon, you know, I think the main thing that got the Demon in the public eye again was when he appeared in Detective Comics a few years later. And
right.
I think that paved the way for, you know, Alan Grant, yeah. And John Wagner, just Alan Grant, I think, at the time, to bring back the Demon series. And I think that would have happened regardless. I don't think, reuniting the Demon is that big a deal. So eventiness, impact and legacy, I'm going to have to give it just a 5, which is,
ooh,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
I think my enjoyment of Blackest Night and the Green Lantern mythos has kind of had an effect on my Impact Legacy scoring, because I'm giving it a 7, even though mainly because of the Zanshi and John Stewart stuff. Because, yeah, as you said, not everything that happens in this kind of had any lasting effects on the DCU. Or, lasted that long. Like, Forager gets killed in this story, but hey, what do you know? He's just had his own miniseries come out. So, comic book deaths. What are you going to do? And see, I wasn't sure how much of an impact Darkseid getting that portion of the anti-life equation would carry on into future stories. So that was a bit of a blind spot for me. So I erred on the side of caution, gave it a 7.
Okay. And we also heard from our semi-OCD. We asked Ryan Daly if he could chip in his bits and pieces today. And he went above and beyond and gave us an audio file. So roll tape, Mike.
Hey guys, it's Ryan Daly from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, giving you my scores for DC's Cosmic Odyssey. Some really quick background. I had never read the series until sometime in 2015, I think. While I was producing the Secret Origins podcast, I got to thinking about the Green Lantern John Stewart. And I knew a big factor in the character's history was that he failed to save the planet Zanshi, and the whole world died along with all of its people. I found out that event took place in the story Cosmic Odyssey. I had heard the name, I knew it involved the new gods of Jack Kirby's Fourth World somehow, but I didn't know any more than that. So I was very pleasantly surprised to find the creative team was Jim Starlin and Mike Mignola. Really? I don't think I could have ever paired two more different creatives than those two. But they made it work, and I found myself really, really enjoying the story. Except for one major hang-up that I will get to. So, how does this event hold up based on Paul's criteria? Well, in the category of eventiness, I'm sorry, but I find Cosmic Odyssey really lacking here, so much so that I was surprised to hear it was actually included in DC OCD. The premise of the story suggests a universe-ending danger worthy of a DC event. I mean, Darkseid, the anti-life, cosmic events on multiple planets with aliens, science fiction, magic, superheroes, a planet actually dying, and the series was comprised of oversized issues. All of that should make for a big blockbuster event. But to me, the scope of the story feels very narrow and very contained. The story is limited to a 4-issue miniseries. There were no tie-ins or supplemental material, as far as I know. No crossovers. Even the cast assembled, while powerful, no doubt. I mean, you got Superman and Batman, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, and Orion, plus Dr. Fate, the Demon, Darkseid. Even they feel small when you look at DC events that feature casts of dozens or even hundreds. The main cast is really 8 heroes splitting up into 4 pairs, going off on little side missions. That's like a decompressed version of a Silver Age Justice League of America tale, and that's just too small for an event. Also, even the name, Cosmic Odyssey. Okay, Odyssey suggests an epic, but it's a kind of long, wandering journey, whereas this story is a race against time to stop the universe from ending. Cosmic Odyssey, it doesn't sound as dire, it doesn't sound as immediate as Crisis or Zero Hour. So with that, I can't go higher than a 6 out of 10 for eventness. But when we get to the story and the writing by Jim Starlin, I can grade that on a whole different scale. I am not comparing this story to any other DC event, just holding it up to its own scrutiny. And like I said, I like this story. I like the characters Starlin chooses to play around with. I like what he does with Forager and Lightray. I didn't really care about either of them before the story, but he made me like them, especially Forager. I like that he tried to do something different with the anti-life equation. I like that he put the demon Etrigan back into Jason Blood. I want to give this story a 9, but I have to give it an 8. That's because of what he does to Jon Stewart. I knew going into the series that Jon failed to save the planet Zanshi, but reading it here, discovering that his arrogance, his hubris, is what dooms the planet? Screw that, man. Jon Jones is absolutely right when he says, "I'll never forgive you for this." That was how I felt in that moment about both Jon Stewart and Jim Starlin. I know there is a desire to give these godlike superheroes feet of clay to let them screw up from time to time and deal with those consequences, but this was too much. This was the kind of screw-up that breaks a character. Because Jon Stewart puts a gun to his head by the end of this book, and you understand why he's doing it. If you attempt suicide, the court can suspend your driver's license. You need to undergo a lot of supervision and counseling. Jon Stewart carries a Green Lantern ring, one of the most powerful objects in all creation. If he is not mentally sound, some awful stuff can happen, as we will see from Hal Jordan down the line. There is no way he should have been allowed to keep the ring going forward. The Guardians of Oa should have stripped it from him. But the Martian Manhunter gives him this tough love speech and then smiles when Jon tells him to go to hell, like he thinks Jon is just tough enough to bounce back from this horrible disaster? No, 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 no. I hate all of that. And that's not even getting into the racial connotations that the arrogant black man gets knocked down way worse than his white counterparts ever would. I'll leave Diablo Frank to make that argument. Again, though, that's my only real problem with the story and the writing. It's a big one, granted. It takes the score from a 10 down to an 8. But other than that, I really dig Starlin's characterization and the plot. It's good stuff. But where Cosmic Odyssey truly shines is the art of Mike Mignola. Damn, does it look good. I mean, I considered giving it a 9 and saying, well, some panels aren't as detailed, they lack backgrounds, they're too dark. Nah, brah. This is gorgeous. 10 out of 10 art. And I never would have expected Mike Mignola of Hellboy fame and Gotham by Gaslight to work on a big superhero space adventure. Like, he's not one that I would ever think of for a project like this. But it works so well, and the reason it works in this case is because Mignola has such a beautiful, nearly perfect rendition for the fourth world heroes and villains. His Darkseid and Orion and Highfather, they feel right. They feel worthy of Jack Kirby. You can feel the King's influence, but there's also like a splash of Walt Simonson on the New Gods, and of course you see it too with Dr. Fate and the Demon. I think Mignola's Martian Manhunter is one of my top three best renditions of the alien Alice. I just love his Martian Manhunter, especially in the scene, I just said that I hate it, but right after Zanshi blows up and Jon is on his knees, physically and emotionally wrecked by his failure, and Jon Jones looms above him on a shattered piece of planetary debris. You don't even see his face. It's in shadow, but for his eyes. It's so powerful. I look at that and I say, oh yeah, the Martian Manhunter can go a couple of rounds with Superman. Yeah, I just love the art in this. Mignola captures the grittiness and the grime of Gotham City and its sewers, but he also nails the cosmic, the interstellar, the interdimensional in a way that feels big and ominous, but in a way that doesn't look like George Perez or anyone else close to that. Which brings me to the final category, legacy, and here, once more, I have to give it a lower score. This story, while good, doesn't have much of a lasting impact on most of the characters. Superman wasn't affected by Cosmic Odyssey. Batman wasn't affected by it, except for the fact that Jim Starlin would eventually take over writing the character. The fourth world characters, you know, Starlin tried to do something different with Anti-Life, but it didn't stick. I don't think we ever see it presented this way since. The concept was abandoned. The story did put the demon Etrigan back in Jason Blood. That is something, but their separation was such a blink-and-you'll-miss-it thing that I bet casual fans don't even know they were ever separated to begin with. The only really lasting legacy this event had was the destruction of Zanshi and how it plagued Jon Stewart. This would set up his arc in the Green Lantern book and Mosaic. beyond that, it became an anchor around his neck. It felt like every time a writer got a hold of John, they had to talk about Zanshi and his guilt. Geoff Johns mentioned it in his run. Pete Tomasi did. Everyone after that, it seems like. Even the Justice League animated series homaged the death of Zanshi in a way. This isn't the kind of legacy that you want. It's like the death of Aquaman's baby or Hank Pym slapping the Wasp. It feels dramatic because it gives real stakes to the fantasy, but it also breaks the fantasy. Now Jon Stewart can never move beyond this failure, nor should he be allowed to. So I give the legacy of Cosmic Odyssey a score of 7. Those scores again for event, 6 for story, 8 for art, 10 for legacy, 7. There you are, Paul and Mike. Thanks again for asking me to contribute to your obsessive compulsive disorder.
So it's 31 from Ryan, which we have, and that comes to 15.5. We'll round it up because that we're generous like that, and it becomes 16. So if you're semi-OCD, you don't count as much as us, the hosts. So if we add our scores together, Mike, you gave it 33, I gave it 31, and Ryan gave it 16, and that comes to 80.
Ooh. 80
points for Cosmic. That's pretty high, isn't that?
That's nice. Yeah.
Ooh. So Cosmic Odyssey immediately stealing second place from Legends. So we have number one on the ladder now. We have Crisis on Infinite Earths. Number two, Cosmic Odyssey, followed very closely by Legends and then, of course, Millennium at on the bottom of the ladder at this stage.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well so. Done. Thank you, Ryan, for your comments. And well done, Cosmic Odyssey.
Yeah. Good job, little event. So, of course, head on over to Comicosity and you can see our podcast links there. And the famous ladder is sitting there waiting for you every time now. And you can see the ladder changing week by week. You know, bookmark the ladder. It's cool. Mm. Yeah.
All the cool kids are doing it.
Yeah, everyone is.
Yep.
Anyway, so, Mike, what's up next?
Next time on the feed, we'll have another exciting installment of Waiting for Doom, catching up on some Doom Patrol goodness. And then the week after that, we will be looking at Invasion.
Ooh. Ooh. It's a big one.
It is a big one.
Oh. Love Invasion. Love it. Sorry.
Can't wait.
Spoilers. Yeah. Cool. All right. So if you want to send us an email, send it to dcocdcast@gmail.com. All the cool kids are doing it. I don't even believe that. Anyway, you can find us on Twitter at DCOCDcast. And, yeah, that's it for the show. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
The therapy is going really well.
I'll let Dr. Herfensturfner know that.
Thanks.